My name is Kazunori Akiyama. I'm a PhD student in the University of Tokyo. So today I'd like to present a new EHD observation of M87, eventually held in the middle of the high state in the very high energy gamma ray in the middle in the March 2012. And collaborators on this work is people in Haystack Observatory. Abbot Lucent is already moved to the MPISL. And Avery Roderick and Jason Dexter from the theoretical side, and of course the whole EHD collaboration. And also, I would like to introduce some recent results of the Japanese EHD group on M87 on behalf of the Japanese group, made by the Kazuhiro Hada and Motoki Kino and Akihiro Doi and Mie Tazaki and Maragi Honma. So probably I don't need to introduce about M87 more. The M87 is one of the nearest Asian jet hosting the supermassive black holes with the secondary largest angular size. So it provides a very fine view of the relativistic jet with a very beautiful collimation profile of the dim brightening structure. And we can see the structure within 100 Churashi radii, even at the centimeter wavelength. And at short millimeter wavelengths, we can see the very tiny scale structure of the on case of the few Churashi radii. And also M87 is exciting source because it's one of the four radio galaxies with very high energy very high energy gamma ray emissions over their 100 giga electron volt. And the past study revealed a very tight connection between the VHE flare and the X-ray flare and also the radio flare on milliarcsecond scales. So that means that, at least from the BAVIP4, the M87 is one of the best laboratories to study the formation process of the relativistic jet and also the production mechanism of the high energy particles. So why we want to see the M87 at 1.3 millimeter? The reason is very clear. So the expected location of the 1.3 millimeter emission is must be close to the jet phase or the central black hole. So the Japanese group, the Hada et al. Successfully measured the position shift of the radio core at various radio frequencies due to the effect of the synchrotron self-absorption. And so if we see the terminal point of the quad shift, the location of the jet phase, it's in the area with a white color. So it's just close to the 7 millimeter radio core. So if we extrapolate this radio core core shift relation to the 1.3 millimeters, the expected location of the 230 gigahertz is consistent with the location of the jet base or the central black hole. And probably this interpretation is supported by the recent detection of the counter jet. So this is a very, very amazing image obtained from the recent high sensitivity observations with BAVA by the Craig Walker. And also this is the high resolution image using the new imaging technique sparse modeling developed by our group. And we can clearly see the counter jet feature in those data. And if this counter jet feature is real, it shows that the location of the supermassive black hole is just very close to the millimeter radio core. And also now we are working on the Alman observations on the M87. So this is the quaflux measured with Alman. So this blue point indicates the preliminary results of the Alman cycle zero observations. And this point indicates the lower frequency observation with VAA. So if we light the arc second scale radio quaflux of the M87, it shows a very beautiful the spectrum break around the 1.3 millimeters. And another interesting result is that, so these are the radio quaflux measured with BAVI, and this is a point for the last EHD observations. So that means the radio quaflux at milliarcsecond scales should have a spectrum break around 1.3 millimeter, indicating that we are actually see the optically thin emission in the vicinity of the central black hole at around 1.3 millimeters. And in the first EHC observation in 2009, actually we found a very compact structure of the 5.5 short reach watch radii corresponding to the ISCO size, dense ISCO size, in the case of the prograde orbit. So actually we confirm, I mean, we can see the vicinity of the black hole in the last EHC observation. And probably this is one of the important updates from the last 2000 meeting. So there are several papers about this, the measurement of the streamline of the jet. So this is the figure taken from the newest results of the jet profile measurement by the Hada et al. 2013. So as in the Nakamura-san's talk, the over the 100 Shirashi radii, it has a very beautiful thermoric streamline. And Hada et al. Found a possible break in the streamline, and it changed to the conical stream inside the 100 Shirashi radii. So if we put the result of the EHC observations using the size and also the cross-check variation, the point is here. So it's very consistent with the lower frequency observations, and it's also supporting that we are actually looking at the structure of the jet base at 1.3 millimeters. And also, the EHC result give us some implications about the magnetic field strength or the energetics like UV over UE. For example, if we think that, so we are looking at the very optical thick, the radio core at 1.3 millimeter with EHC with a uniform magnetic field, we can estimate the magnetic field strength using the very classic the synchrotron cess absorption formula using the size of the emission and the flux of the emission. And it gives the magnetic field strength of the 300 Gauss. It's quite huge and probably it's problematic. For example, if we calculate the pointing flux using this magnetic field strength and also the core size, the pointing power estimated for the 1.3 meter emission is 10 to the 47 L per second. This is very huge. So because it's three orders of magnitude higher than the total jet power estimated in the kiloparsec scale jet. And also maybe this strong magnetic field is problematic because if we calculate the cooling time scale of the synchrotron emission, it's only the 40 minutes for 1.3 meter. So we can expect a very fast variability at 1.3 millimeter, but we cannot see such a kind of things in the real observations. So that means we need more weaker magnetic field or strength or the more weaker size for the SSA thick region. So that indicates that what we detect with the EHD is probably contains the optically thin emission and optically thick emission. So it's just partially optically thick. And Motoki Kino did such a kind of constraint on the magnetic field strength and energetics using such a kind of limitations. And the result is in the Motoki's poster in outside the room. So please look at his poster. And for 1.3 meter emission, I mean, many sophisticated models are proposed for the emission structure at 1.3 meter. So this is the average high mass model. The emission is dominated by the emission from the approaching jet. And another kind of jet model is proposed by the Dextor et al. And the emission is dominated by the counter jet emission, illuminating the last photon orbit. And also the accretion disk model is proposed for the 1.3 meter emission. And the average model can explain the 2009 data very well. And also the models of the JSON's model also expect the Fluvius half maximum size of the 5.5, around 5 to Shirashi radii. So it's broadly consistent with the 2009 data. So all models are broadly consistent with the amplitude measurement of the M87. So probably the next question is how is the phase information of this model? So as in the nice review on the closure phase by Vincent yesterday, we can get the phase information through the measurement of the closure phase currently. So this figure shows the phase distribution of each model So I just do the Fourier transformation of this image and just pick the phase part from the complex visibilities, and this line indicates the current, the future UV coverage of the EHT, and the white point indicates the current UV coverage of the US baseline. So how is the phase of these models? So for example, for the Arizona, California baseline, the baseline is too short to resolve the structure, so it's almost zero. And for the longer baselines between the US mainland and Hawaii, the separation between the two baselines is too small in the UV plane. So generally the phase is almost similar. So for, if we calculate the closure phase for these models, generally we can expect that the closure phase should be close to be zero, because the, so these long baseline, the phase is canceled out and it's also close to zero. So here is the the result of the new observation in 2012. So in 2012, we succeed to detect the closure phase on M87. So this is the closure phase of the current US triangles, and it's very close to zero, as expected. So this gives more detailed comparison between models. So this solid line indicates the prediction from the average high mass model, and the dot line and dashed line indicates the prediction from the JSON Dextros model. So it's quite, consistent. So in this plot, I did not plot the closure phase of the average low mass model. So as average talk, for the low mass model case, this closure phase actually ruled out because it's almost close to zero, but the average low mass model have a closure phase of 20 degrees. So currently our data is consistent with these three types of model, but we cannot distinguish models from this data. So what about future? So after 2015, we have the LMT or ALMA. And here is the closure phase of these models with LMT and also the ALMA. And you can clearly see that, for example, the whole LMT baseline, there is a clear difference between JSON's model and average model. So we can distinguish the models with the future closure measurement with LMT. And also, also ALMA has a very high sensitivity, so we can determine the closure phase with a very high accuracy, about a few degrees in future observation with ALMA triangles, and we can distinguish this kind of the difference in future. And also, in addition to closure phase, the amplitude distribution is also quite different. So this is the amplitude distribution, and you can clearly see that the amplitude in longer baselines is quite different in these models. So probably we can get the crucial information to clarify the Schwarzschild radii structure, scale structure, after 2015 with EHT. And also, this implication is actually proved in the recent works of the imaging works. So actually, the Lu et al. Succeeded to reconstruct the average model image using the BSMEM or squeeze on the UV coverage of the EHT after 2015. And also now we are working on another imaging technique, the sparse modeling, adopting the different kind of the regularization term. And we successfully reconstruct such a kind of donut image or crescent-like image with a very small shadow, considering the low mass black hole case. So probably, at least for M87, our future must be bright. We can properly image such a kind of structure in very near future. And also we can get another interesting implications from the observed brightness temperatures. So this figure shows the brightness temperature as a function of frequencies. And if we calculate the brightness temperature of the 230 GHz structure, it's 2 × 10⁻¹⁰ Kelvin. And these points are taken from the past VLBI observations of the space VLBI or many VLBI observations. I just take a peak brightness of the radio core. So it's interesting that So the peak brightness temperature of the radio core is very consistent, I mean, within only a factor of few, along the wide frequency coverage of the two orders of magnitude. And for example, if we think that if we see the optically thick radio core in these observations, the magnetic field strength is proportional to nu times the inverse square of the brightness temperature. And if we use the Kwasniewski relation to convert from nu to the distance from the black hole, we can change this relation like that. And if the brightness temperature is roughly constant, this means that the total the total magnetic field is roughly inversely proportional to the distance from the black hole. And it's very interesting because it seems consistent with, for example, the Troyer magnetic field profile of the classical conical jet model. But anyway, of course, I mean, this is a very simple analysis, and also just I took the peak brightness of the radio core. So maybe, I mean, this kind of analysis is maybe long, but it clearly shows that, I mean, now we are on the stage where we can discuss the dominance of the toroidal or poroidal B field in the 100 Schwarzschild radii, I mean, using the high resolution data of the EHT or other instruments.
So
probably in future, probably we can measure measure the magnetic field strength using through the measurement of the brightness temperature using the future EHT observations or maybe radio astronomy observation at lower frequencies. And also we can estimate, for example, the toroidal magnetic field or poroidal magnetic field strength from the measurement of the streamline or the acceleration profile from the lower frequency observations. So for doing this now, we are currently working on the high resolution imaging via the sparse modeling to determine the streamline and the core size accurately. And also we conducted a very massive monitoring of the M87 jet to determine the acceleration profile within 100 Schwarzschild radii. And also now we are working on the new 3mm observations with VLVA and GVT. So this is a preliminary image of the 3mm radio jet. And also we are now working on the polarimetric observation at 3mm, and this is a pretty preliminary result of the possible detection of the linear polarization. So we are still working on the calibration issues, so this is not final results, but the preliminary result is very interesting. So the pink lines indicate the orientation of the EDTA, so the magnetic field should be perpendicular to the pink lines. So this indicates that if this result is true, the magnetic field structure near the core is dominated by the poroidal field, and it changed to the toroidal dominant field at the downstream. So finally, let's move on the VHT flares in 2012. So this is the light curve of at the very high energy gamma ray. Observed with Veritas and in 2011 and in 2012. So in 2011, M87 is a quiescent in the VHG, but in 2012, Veritas detected the elevation of the flux level in VHG band. And this is very peculiar, the enhancement, because the flux of the VHG enhancement is very weak, I mean, 10 times weaker than the previous VHG flares. And also the duration is quite long, I mean, about 2 months, which is much, much longer than the previous flares with a duration of 2 days. So maybe this is a new kind of VHG enhancement. And we conducted the radio following up observations with the Japanese VERA at 7mm and 1.3 centimeters, and we detected a very, strong, the synchronized radio flare at the radio core around this VHG enhancement. So this result clearly indicates that the VHG emission region should be close to the 7mm radio core, which is
only a few tens of Schwarz radii downstream from the center of black hole. And eventually, we observed M87 with EHT just in the middle of the radio brightening. So, of course, the question is, what's going on in Iskoscale structure? So here is the result. So this is the UV distance and amplitude plot. And first of all, we detected the flux increment on arcsecond scales compared to the previous EHT observations, and the quark flux on arcsecond scales shows the increase about 20% higher than 2009 data. But we cannot see anything in Iskoscale structures. So these color points indicate a 2012 result, and these black points indicate a 2009 result. But we cannot see, any significant change in the Iskoscale structure in terms of the flux density and size. So this seems like a missing link. So we detected a radio brightening on milliarcsecond scales in the vicinity of the radio core, but we cannot see anything in Iskoscale structure. So the possible plausible scenario is that if the VHE region have extended structure, for example, the structure larger than 20 Schwarz radii, the structure is too extended for the current EHT, the UV coverages, and the correlated flux is very low at the VLVI baselines. Maybe such a kind of things occurs in 2012 event. So based on this scenario, we can put the lower limit size of the 20 Schwarz radii, and it seems compatible with the upper limit size of the 60 Schwarz radii constrained by better observations and also the causality argument from the Fourier duration, giving the upper limit size of the 100 Schwarz radii. So merging with a better result and our scenario, maybe VHE emission region for this enhancement could be constrained to the range of the 20 Schwarz radii to 60 Schwarz radii. This is very interesting because the 20 Schwarz radii size, size of the 20 Schwarz radii is incompatible with many VHE models for the very fast the VHE activities. So maybe we need another kind of mechanism to explain these VHE flares. So probably my presentation time is end. So this is Tamaris, and thank you for listening.
Questions? Thomas, you're raising your hand. Yeah.
Just a little word of care. You inserted in the synchrotron self-absorption equation, you inserted a turnover frequency of 230 gigahertz and a size of 40 microarc seconds, and then you got 300 Gauss for the magnetic field. This is an upper limit, of course, because the turnover frequency is probably not 230 gigahertz, it might be lower. And since it goes also as the force power of the size, and the new data show that the size is smaller, so you're coming down to more reasonable values. I think maybe a few 10 Gauss is possible, but not 300.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You commented that this very high energy flare was different than the previous ones. It was weaker and longer. The previous ones were associated, as far as I know, to HST1. Can you comment on that?
Sorry.
The previous flares in high energy were associated to the HST1 component. And this one you say is in the core. Can you comment a bit on that?
Yes. So you mentioned about the whether there is some activities in HST1 around this flare. So actually, the Kazuhiro Hada actually reduced the data of EVN. And we checked the HST1 data, but there is no activities in the HST1 around this the VHE enhancement.
So the very nice image, but the polarization image at 86 gigahertz. So my question is that have you collect for the Faraday rotation for the in order to discuss the orientation of the magnetic field?
So probably, I think it's better to, I mean, for Kazuhiro to comment about that.
Just quickly.
Just quick comment. In terms of Faraday rotation, not yet. So the analysis is in progress. Then, but actually, so he doesn't show. He only show at 86 GHz image. But actually, near in time with this observation, we also observed low frequency data set, multi frequency data set, including 43, 22, 8, 15, 5, 2 GHz. So now we are going to investigate the Faraday rotation and also rotation measure estimate. Then hopefully we should be able to measure the EVPA, intrinsic EVPA, more accurately. But the analysis is still in progress.